Chapter 19. The Trouble with Dogs. The Pedestal. The Graveyard. The Outer Gate. 1. The trouble with dogs, supposing you don't beat or kick them, of course, is they trust you. You're the food giver and shelter provider. You're the one that can fish the squeaky monkey out from beneath the couch with one of your clever five-fingered paws. You are also the love giver. The problem with that kind of unquestioning trust is that it carries a weight of responsibility. Mostly, that's okay. In our current situation, it was anything but. Radar was clearly having the time of her life, practically bouncing along beside me. And why not? She was no longer the old half-blind German shepherd I'd had to haul, first in Dora's cart and then in the basket behind Claudia's oversized trike. She was young again. She was strong again. She'd even had the chance to rip out the seat of a nasty old dwarf's pants. She was easy in her body and easy in her mind as well. She was with the food giver, the shelter provider, the love giver. All was awesome sauce in her world. I, on the other hand, was struggling against panic. If you've ever been lost in a big city, you'll know. Except here, there was no friendly stranger I could ask for directions. And here, the city itself had turned against me. One street led to another, but each new street led only to dead ends, where gargoyles leered down from great blind buildings I'd swear hadn't been there when I turned around to check for Peterkin slinking along in our wake. The rain slackened to a drizzle, but my view of the palace was often blocked by buildings that seemed to grow the moment I looked away, cutting off the view. And there was something worse. When I was able to glimpse the palace, it always seemed to be in a different place than the one I was expecting, as if it were moving too. That could have been a fear-driven illusion. I told myself so again and again, but I didn't completely believe it. The afternoon was passing, and every wrong turn reminded me that dark was approaching. The fact was simple and stark. Thanks to Peterkin, I had entirely lost my bearings. I almost expected to come upon a candy house where a witch would invite me and my dog, me Hansel, her Gretel, inside. Meanwhile, Radar kept pace with the three-wheeler, looking up at me with a doggy grin that almost shouted, "Aren't we having fun?" On we went, and on. Every now and then, I got a clear view of the sky ahead and stepped up on the three-wheeler's seat in an effort to glimpse the city wall, which had to be the biggest thing in the landscape, except for the three spires of the palace. I couldn't see it. And those spires were now on my right, which seemed impossible. Surely if I'd crossed in front of the palace, I would have cut the Galleon Road. And I hadn't. I felt like screaming. I felt like curling up in a ball with my hands around my head. I wanted to find a policeman, which is what my mother told me children were supposed to do if they got lost. And all the time, Radar was grinning up at me. "Isn't this great? Isn't it just the coolest ever?" "We're in trouble, girl." I pedaled on. No patch of blue in the sky now, and certainly no sun to guide me. Only buildings crowding in, some smashed, some merely vacant, all somehow hungry. The only sound was that faint, dull whispering. If it had been constant, I might have been able to get used to it, but it wasn't. It came in bursts, as if I were passing congregations of the unseen dead. That terrible afternoon, I can never convey to you how terrible, seemed to go on forever. But at last, I began to sense the first draining toward evening. I think I cried a little, but can't remember for sure. If I did, I think it was as much for Radar as for myself. I had brought her all this way, and I'd accomplished what I'd come for. But in the end, it was all going to be for nothing. Because of the goddamned dwarf. I wished Radar had ripped out his throat instead of the seat of his pants. Worst of all was the trust I saw in Radar's eyes every time she looked up at me. You trusted a fool, I thought. Worse luck for you, honey. 2. We came to an overgrown park surrounded on three sides by gray buildings stacked with empty balconies. They looked to me like a cross between the expensive condos lining Chicago's Gold Coast and prison cell blocks. In the center of it was a piece of huge statuary on a high pedestal. It appeared to be a man and a woman flanking an enormous butterfly, but like all the other works of art I'd encountered in Lillamar, not to mention the poor murdered mermaid, it had been mostly destroyed. The head and one wing of the butterfly had been pulverized. The other wing had survived, and based on the way it had been carved, all color was gone if there had ever been any. I was sure it was a monarch. The man and woman might have been a king and queen in days of yore, but there was no way to tell because both of them were gone from the knees up. As I sat looking at this vandalized tableau, three bells rang out across the haunted city, each peal spaced out and solemn. "You don't need to be through the gate when the three bells ring," Claudia had said, "but you must be out of Lillamar soon after, before dark." Dark would be soon. I started to pedal on, knowing it would be fruitless, knowing I was caught in the spiderweb Peterkin had called the Lily, wondering what fresh horror the night soldiers would bring when they came for us. And then I stopped, struck by a sudden idea that was simultaneously wild and perfectly reasonable. I did a U-turn and returned to the park. I started to dismount the trike, considered the height of the pedestal that ruined tableau stood on, and changed my mind. I pedaled into the high grass, hoping there were none of those nasty yellow flowers to give me a burn. I also hoped the three-wheeler wouldn't get bogged down because the ground was mushy from all the rain. I put my back into it and kept pedaling. Radar stayed with me, not walking or even running, but leaping along. Even in my current situation, that was wonderful to see. The statuary tableau was surrounded by standing water. I parked in it, hung my pack over the handlebars, stood on the seat of the trike, and reached up. By rising on my toes, I could just get my fingers over the gritty edge of the pedestal. Thanking God that I was still in fairly good shape, I did a chin-up, got first one forearm and then the other on a surface that was littered with stone chips, and scrambled the rest of the way. I had one bad moment when I thought I was going to tip over backward, landing on the trike and probably breaking something, but I gave one final lunge and grabbed the stone woman's foot. I got a couple of good belly scratches from the rubble as I pulled myself the rest of the way, but sustained no real damage. Radar was looking up at me and barking. I told her to hush, and she did. She kept wagging her tail, though.
"Isn't he wonderful? Look how high he is."
I got up and grasped the remaining wing of the butterfly. Maybe there was a little magic left in it, the good kind, because I felt some of my fear subside. Holding it first with one hand and then the other, I did a slow 360-degree turn. I saw the three spires of the palace against the darkening sky, and now they were roughly where what remained of my sense of direction told me they should be. I couldn't see the city wall and hadn't really expected to. The pedestal I stood on was high, but too many buildings were in the way. Purposely, I was almost sure.
"Wait, Radar," I said. "This won't take long."
I hoped I was right about that. I bent down and picked up a piece of stone with a sharp point and held it loosely in my fist. Time ticked by. I counted to 500 by tens, then by fives, then lost count. I was too concerned with the darkening day. I could almost feel it draining away like blood from a bad cut. At last, just when I'd begun to believe I'd climbed up here for nothing, I saw a darkness arise in what I'd decided to call the south. It came toward me. The monarchs were returning for the night. I held my arm out, pointing it like a rifle toward the oncoming butterflies. I lost sight of the cloud when I knelt down again, but continued to hold my arm out straight. I used the point of the shard I'd picked up to scratch a mark on the side of the pedestal, then sighted along my outstretched hand at a gap between two buildings on the far side of the park. It was a start. Assuming the gap didn't disappear, that was. I pivoted on my knees and slid my legs over the edge. My plan was to hold on until I was dangling from the side of the pedestal, but my hands slipped and I fell. Radar gave a single bark of alarm. I knew enough to let my knees flex and to roll when I landed. The ground was soft from the rain, which was good. I got splashed from head to toe with mud and water, which wasn't. I got up, almost falling over my eager dog when I did, wiped my face, and looked for my mark. I pointed my hand along it and was relieved to see the gap between the two buildings was still there. The buildings, wood, not stone, were diagonally across the park. I saw standing water in places and knew the three-wheeler would get bogged down for sure if I tried to ride it. I was going to owe Claudia an apology for leaving it behind, but I'd worry about that when I saw her. If I did. Come on, girl. I slung on my pack and began to run. 3. We splashed through the wide puddles of standing water. Some were shallow, but in places the water was almost up to my knees, and I could feel the mud trying to suck the sneakers from my feet. Radar kept pace easily, tongue flying, eyes bright. Her fur was soaked and matted to her newly muscular body, but she didn't seem to mind. We were having an adventure. The buildings looked to me like warehouses. We reached them, and I stopped long enough to resettle and retie one of my sopping sneakers. I looked back at the pedestal. I could no longer make out my mark. The ruined tableau was at least 100 yards behind us, but I knew where it was. I pointed with both arms, back and ahead, then ran between the buildings with radar right beside me. They'd been warehouses, all right. I could smell the ancient ghost aroma of the fish that had been stored in them long ago. My pack bounced and jounced. We came out on a narrow lane lined with more warehouses. They all looked as if they'd been broken into, probably looted long ago. The pair directly across from us were too close together to slip between, so I went right, found an alley, and ran through it. On the far side was someone's overgrown garden. I jinked to the left, back to what I hoped was my former straight line, and ran on. I tried to tell myself it wasn't twilight. Not yet, not yet. But it was. Of course it was. Again and again I had to detour around buildings that were in our way, and again I tried to regain the straight course to where I'd seen the butterflies. I was no longer sure I was doing that, but I had to try. It was all I had. We passed between two great stone houses, the gap so narrow I had to sidle. Radar had no such problem. I came out, and to my right, in a walkway between what might once have been a grand museum and a glass-sided conservatory, I saw the city wall. It reared above the buildings on the far side of the street, the clouds so low in the gathering gloom that the top was lost. Radar, come on! That gloom made it impossible to know if real dark had come or not, but I was terribly afraid it had. We ran down the street we'd come out on. Not the right one, but close to the Galleon Road, I felt sure of it. Ahead of us, the buildings gave way to a cemetery on the far side of the street. It was full of leaning gravestones, memorial tablets, and several buildings that had to be crypts. It was the last place I wanted to venture into after dark, but if I was right, God, please let me be right, I prayed. That was the way we had to go. I sprinted through tall iron gates standing ajar, and for the first time, Radar hesitated, front paws on a crumbling concrete slab, rear paws in the street. I stopped too, long enough to catch my breath.
I don't like it either, girl, but we have to, so come on.
She came. We wove our way around the leaning grave markers. An evening mist was beginning to rise from the overgrown grass and thistles. I could see a wrought iron fence 40 yards ahead. It looked too high to climb, even if I hadn't had my dog with me, but there was a gate. I tripped over a gravestone and went sprawling. I started to get up, then froze, at first not believing what I was seeing. Radar was barking wildly. A desiccated hand, with yellowing bone showing through torn skin, emerged from the ground. It opened and closed, clutching and releasing little showers of wet earth. When I saw such things in horror movies, I just laughed and hooted along with my friends and grabbed more popcorn. I wasn't laughing now. I screamed, and the hand heard me. It turned toward me like a fucking radar dish, clutching at the darkening air. I leaped to my feet and ran. Raids ran beside me, barking and snarling and looking back over her shoulder. I reached the cemetery gate. It was locked. I drew back, lowered one shoulder, and hit it the way I'd once hit opposing linemen. It rattled, but didn't give. Radar's barks were climbing the ladder, no longer woof, 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 but yark, 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 almost as if she were also trying to scream. I looked back and saw more hands emerging from the ground, like ghastly flowers with fingers instead of petals. First just a few, then dozens, maybe hundreds, and something else, something worse. The squall of rusty hinges. The crypts were about to give up their dead. I remember thinking that punishing trespassers was one thing, understandable, but this was ridiculous. I hit the gate again, giving it everything I had. The lock broke. The gate burst open, and I went flailing forward, arms waving, trying to keep my balance. I almost made it, then tripped over something else, maybe a curbstone, and went to my knees. I looked up and saw that I had fallen into the Galleon Road. I got to my feet, knees stinging and pants ripped. I looked behind me into the graveyard. There was nothing coming after us, but those waving hands were quite bad enough. I thought about the strength it would take to burst open coffin lids and claw through the intervening earth. For all I knew, the Empisarians didn't bother with coffins, maybe they just wrapped their dead in shrouds and called it good. The ground mist had taken on a blue glow, as if electrified.
Run!
I shouted at Radar.
Run!
We ran for the gate. We ran for our lives. 4. We'd come out on the road much further up from where we'd turned off to follow Mr. Bowditch's marks, but I could see the outer gate in the gathering gloom. It might have been half a mile ahead, maybe a little less. I was gasping, and my legs felt heavy. Some of that was because my pants had gotten soaked with mud and water when I fell from the pedestal, but mostly it was simple exhaustion. I'd played sports for my entire scholastic career, but had skipped basketball. Not just because I didn't really care for Coach Harkness, but because, given my size and weight, running really wasn't my thing. There was a reason I played first during baseball season. It was the defensive position requiring the least speed. I had to slow to a jog. Even though the gate didn't seem to be getting any closer, it was the best I could do if I didn't want to cramp up and have to stop. Then Radar looked over her shoulder and began giving those high, frightened barks again. I turned and saw a flock of brilliant blue lights coming toward us from the direction of the palace. It had to be the night soldiers. I didn't waste time trying to convince myself otherwise, just picked up my pace again. My breath ran in and out of me, each gasp and blow hotter than the last. My heart was thundering. Bright spots began to pulse in front of my eyes, expanding and contracting. I looked back again and saw the blue lights were closer, and they had gained legs. They were men, each surrounded by a fierce blue aura. I couldn't see their faces yet, and didn't want to. I stumbled over my own stupid feet, caught my balance, ran on. Full dark had arrived, but the gate was a lighter shade of gray than the wall, and I could see it was closer. If I could keep running, I thought we had a chance. A stitch started in my side, not bad at first, then sinking in. It ran up my rib cage and drilled into my armpit. My hair, wet and muddy, flopped up and down on my forehead. My pack thudded against my back, so much ballast. I slipped it off and slung it into a nest of brambles, beside a turreted building flanked by posts striped red and white and topped with stone butterflies. Those monarchs were still whole, probably because they were too high to reach without ladders. I stumbled again, this time over a snarl of downed trolley wires, caught myself again, and ran on. They were closing in. I thought about Mr. Bowditch's 45, but even if it worked against those apparitions, there were too many of them. Then, a wonderful thing happened. All at once, my lungs seemed deeper, and the stitch in my side disappeared. I'd never done enough extended running to experience a second wind, but it had happened to me a few times on long bike rides. I knew it wouldn't last long, but it didn't have to. The gate was now only 100 yards ahead. I risked one more glance over my shoulder and saw that the shining troop of night soldiers had stopped gaining. I faced forward and put on even more speed, head thrown back, hands clenched, and pumping, breathing deeper than ever. For 30 yards or so, I even pulled ahead of Radar. Then she caught up again and looked over at me. No big isn't this fun grin on her chops now. Her ears were flat against her skull, and white rings showed around her brown eyes. She looked terrified. At last, the gate. I pulled in one last deep breath and screamed,
"Open in the name of Leah of the Galleon!"
The ancient machinery under the gate screeched into life, then smoothed out to a deep rumble. The gate trembled and began to slide open on its hidden track. But slowly, too slowly, I was afraid. Could the night soldiers leave the city if we slipped through? I had an idea they couldn't, that their fierce blue auras would wink out and they'd crumble away, or melt like the Wicked Witch of the West. An inch. Two. I could see a tiny sliver of the outside world, where there were wolves, but no shining blue men, and no rotted hands coming out of graveyard earth. I looked back and really saw them for the first time. 20 or more men with maroon lips, the color of dried blood, and parchment pale faces. They were dressed in loose pants and shirts that looked weirdly like army fatigues. That blue light was gushing from their eyes, spilling downward, coating them. They had features like ordinary men, but they were gauzy. I could glimpse the skulls beneath. They were sprinting at us, leaving little splashes of blue light behind them that dimmed and faded out, but I didn't think they were going to make it in time. It was going to be very close, but I thought we were going to escape. 3 inches. 4. Oh, God, it was so slow. Then came the sound of an old-fashioned fire bell.
Clang-a-lang-a-lang!
And the cadre of blue skeleton men parted, 10 or a dozen to the left and the rest to the right. Speeding up the Galleon Road came an electric vehicle, like a jumbo golf cart or a squat open-air bus. In front, moving some sort of steering stick to and fro, was a man, I used the word advisedly, with graying hair falling to either side of his hideous, half-transparent face. He was gaunt and tall. Others were crammed in behind him, their blue auras overlapping and dripping down to the wet pavement like strange blood. The driver was aiming right at me, meaning to crush me against the gate. I wasn't going to make it after all. But my dog could.
Radar! Go to Claudia!
She didn't move, only looked up at me in terror.
Go, Raids! For God's sake, go!
I had dumped my pack because its sodden weight was slowing me down. Mr. Bowditch's gun was different. I couldn't shoot enough night soldiers with it to keep them from getting to me, and I'd no intention of letting them have it. I unbuckled the holster belt with its decorative conchos and slung it into the darkness. If they wanted the 45, they'd have to leave the walled city to look for it. Then I slapped Radar's hindquarters, and hard. Blue light washed over me. I know you can resign yourself to death, because in that moment, I did it.
Go to Claudia! Go to Dora! Just go!
She gave me one final wounded look. I'll never forget it. And then slipped through the widening gap. Something hit me hard enough to drive me against the still-moving gate, but not hard enough to smash me against it. I saw the gray-haired knight soldier lunge over his steering stick. I saw his outstretched hands, the finger bones visible through the tallow of his glowing skin. I saw the eternal grin of his teeth and jaw. I saw blue streams of some awful reanimating power gushing from his eyes. The gate was open enough for me now. I dipped away from the thing's clutching fingers and rolled toward the opening. For a moment, I saw Radar standing in the darkness at the end of Kingdom Road, looking back, hoping. I lunged toward her, one hand outstretched, then those terrible fingers closed around my throat.
"No, kitty,"
the undead knight soldier whispered.
"No, whole one. You've come to the Lily uninvited, and here you will stay."
It leaned close, a grinning skull beneath a stretched gauze of pale skin. A walking skeleton. The others began to close in. One shouted a word. I thought it was Elamar, a combination of Empis and Lilimar, but now I know better. The gate began to close. The dead hand tightened, cutting off my air.
"Go, Radar. Go and be safe," I thought.
Then knew no more.